Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hello, this is a continuation of my series of my fertility journey and my pregnancy journey. And this week I'm sharing a recording from April 2022. And this is one that is a continuation of my last episode that had some of my thoughts from April 2022, but this is the rest of the recording. I divided it up so that I can keep my episode short, between 20 and 30 minutes. So in this episode, I really discuss my infertility workup and what I kind of learned at my appointment with my midwife, as well as my lab results and what types of testing were in my future at that point. I also talk in this recording about some supplements that were recommended to me by my midwife. And I just want to make clear before you hear that part of the episode that these were supplements recommended to me. So my midwife knows my past medical history, and she knows that I'm otherwise healthy besides like some asthma diagnosis. But she knows my whole entire medical history, surgical history, social history. And so these supplements were recommended to me. So I'm just sharing what supplements I was recommended and which ones I chose to use. But if you, and this is purely from, you know, an educational standpoint, me sharing my personal decisions, so you should not be taking this as medical advice at all. But if you are interested in these supplements from hearing my story and hearing what I learned from my research, then I highly, highly recommend that you talk to your doctor or your midwife about the supplements so that they can make that recommendation to you. And so this is really just from a standpoint that I'm sharing my story so that you know what questions to ask. Because it's really important before starting a supplement or a medication that you talk to your doctor about it before you start it, just to make sure that it is right for you. Because I'm really just sharing what was right for me. I also want to give a heads up in this recording that I talk about thinking that I had PCOS and then thinking that I had post-pill PCOS. And I just want to put this in the context that I was eventually diagnosed with PCOS. So I don't want to really back up that I had post-pill PCOS, because in my recording I kind of talk about it like it's a done deal, that it was definitely what was going on. But I just want to share that, you know, that's what I was feeling at the time, but that's probably not what was actually happening. I probably did have regular PCOS, despite not having symptoms of it, because I was diagnosed with it later. So that's just something that I wanted to share there, which isn't really a spoiler alert because I've mentioned it so many different times. But it's interesting for me, even just listening back to the recording as I was editing it and preparing this episode, that it's interesting that I had that seed planted in my head that it was a potential, and then later finding out that I had it, I was kind of relieved, which is going to be something that I'll talk about in a future episode, because I have recordings from pretty soon after I was fully diagnosed. So let's blast back to April 2022 and hear what was going on at that point. And so I'll just share this. My test did come back and all of it was mostly normal. There was some irregularities with my
chem panel, I was probably magnesium deficient, which I found out that my prenatal vitamin only provides 13% of magnesium, and I don't feel like I really watch that in my diet every day to make sure I get my magnesium from all food sources to get to 100%. And I also found out that it is known that birth control can lower your body's absorption of magnesium. So being on birth control for 8 to 10 years, that is sure to mess with it too. So I started taking a magnesium tablet, or magnesium gummies for that. And hopefully that will clear it up. I don't think that is the reason why my periods have been irregular, but it was just something that it's always good to get lab testing because you can find something incidental that wasn't really causing me any symptoms. Maybe that was why I've been having headaches lately, but I always kind of dismiss it as caffeine withdrawal headaches. But we'll see how that works, but I'm just glad that I can replenish the magnesium because I want to optimize my body's function and not just treat things that are symptomatic. But otherwise, everything was within normal range, my estrogen, my FSH, my thyroid. So a lot of reassurance, definitely. And then I got my anti-Müllerian hormone, which is basically a measure of how much ovarian reserve you have. It can be actually used to see if you are in menopause, and it can see if you have primary ovarian failure, which means menopause, basically premature menopause at a really early age, which could be someone in their 20s. More often, people in their 30s or early 40s would be considered premature, but it can happen at any age, and can happen in things like Turner syndrome, for example. So that hormone was really the important one that I was looking out for, and of course that was the one that took the longest to get uploaded, but my level was about 10. And if you know anything about anti-Müllerian hormone, you're like, oh my goodness, that is a high number. Yes, it is very high. I think normal would be around like 4 or 5. So this is like twice the level of normal. And so I was like, oh great. I knew that a low level was bad and a high level must be good, right? So then I looked it up and I found, like, the first study that I found was basically it said that ultra high levels, so levels that are too high, like twice or triple the upper limit of normal, those are 97% of the time, 97% of the time is with PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome. And I was like, oh my goodness, I have PCOS, even though I have none of the symptoms of it besides irregular periods. I've never had any signs of excess androgens. I've never really suffered with acne. I'm not suffering with acne now. I don't have any hair growth. I don't have any hair loss where hair is supposed to be. And I have never had polycystic ovaries on an ultrasound. And I also don't have any of the real risk factors for PCOS, such as diabetes and obesity. My midwife actually told me that my BMI was a little bit on the low side, that she's almost concerned about it. A BMI lower than 19 is usually concerning. Mine's 19.6, so I'm a little bit higher than that, but she did say that I do have a lower body fat percentage, but she doesn't think it's a real concern. But that's just to say that if anything, the opposite of obesity is the problem that might be something to be aware of. So I really don't have any of the risk factors, but I was convinced, okay, 97%, that means I have this. So immediately, instead of talking to someone about it, and I actually realized this while I was like on a walk outside. So instead of going straight home and talking to my husband about it, or calling someone, or crying, or trying to forget about it, or anything like that, I decided to just instantly put on a podcast about PCOS because if I'm going to have this, I want to learn as much as I can about it. So I put one on and they were talking about the different kinds of PCOS, and of course they were talking about the insulin resistance type of PCOS, and then they started talking about post-pill PCOS. And I was like, oh, this is what I have. Okay, cool. So that is to say that, and this was probably where the 3% came from, was that women can also have these really high anti-Müllerian hormones after they stop the pill. And this was something that I didn't learn in medical school, so I didn't know this, and I didn't find this when I was looking up reasons for elevated AMH levels. So I was kind of relieved, to be honest with you, because PCOS is a nasty disease, and it is one that you have to live with, and you can only do lifestyle changes and take medications to really suppress symptoms, and it never really goes away entirely. People can get pregnant fine on PCOS and live normal lives, but it's always there. So I was glad that this was probably due to just me getting off the pill. I wish someone told me to expect this before I took the test, because when you get an abnormal test, then your mind kind of runs wild. Like, if you had an elevated white blood count, your mind is going to go towards leukemia, to cancer. So I just wish that I knew that going into it, but I'm glad that I got to the conclusion that I did, that I'm probably fine, and my body's probably just readjusting back to being off the pill. So you might be wondering, like, I did have a normal period, like, a month after I stopped the pill, so why am I worried about irregular periods? This seems regular to me. But the reason why is because I was due to have my second period, if you're doing the every 28 days count, last week. So I am late, but it could be my normal that I have periods every 5 weeks, because that is technically still in the normal range of somewhere between 21 to 35 days, but I'm getting very close to that maximum. And so I am probably thinking that I may have skipped a cycle entirely, that I just did not ovulate and I didn't have menses this month. And yeah, that is actually normal for first getting off the pill, but you have to remember I was feeling very hopeful after I had my period for the first time getting off the pill, because that means everything is working. So now that just means that not everything is working, and I'm glad that I am doing the work ahead of time now to make sure that everything is working, that I'm going to see my midwife. She wants me to call as soon as I have my period because they want to do additional lab tests after I am on day 3 of my cycle. And then we want to do an ultrasound around the time of ovulation to make sure that everything is working. And we're even discussing different options if things aren't working. So we're talking about Clomid and letrozole and using medications that can help with ovulation in order to make this happen. So that is all to say that my timeline that I wanted to give birth and to be pregnant during certain months and to give birth in a certain month. So now that is just going to keep getting pushed. So if I got pregnant this month, it would be a January baby, for example. So every month it's kind of getting pushed and pushed. And part of me is getting a little bit worried that it's going to get pushed all the way into my intern year of residency, which would not be ideal and would almost, to me, kind of be a waste of having a few easier months at the end of fourth year where I'm kind of just sitting around, and it's like a waste of those months that I don't have to spend with my future child. So there's some hard revelations to make, but I'm hoping that because I'm working on lab results now and working with the midwife and talking about taking medications for things, that it's going to give me the best results possible. And also, my midwife also shared with me that it's really only a 30% chance for each cycle that a woman gets pregnant, even if everything is working fine, even if she had sex every day of her ovulation period and knew exactly when the ovulation period was, and it's still a 30% chance. So that makes me feel a little bit better that, yeah, the first month didn't work out, that's fine. And I don't even know if I was ovulating that first month because it was right off the pill. And then the second month, I don't think I will have a period for this month. So that is to say, I will just try to be as patient as possible, even though I like to get answers and I like to know what I'm supposed to do at all times. My midwife actually did give me a list of supplements and nutritional advice that she had for me, and I really liked this because this really does highlight the difference between how a midwife and also how, like, DO physicians might approach a preconception care, because none of the MDs I worked with that are OBGYNs ever gave such directed nutritional and supplement advice to patients. Like, I literally got a list from her that was a list of about 5 supplements that she recommends for her patients to purchase and to use as they're trying to conceive, as well as the diet recommendations, which I was pleasantly surprised was the Mediterranean diet, which I always recommend to patients and to family members because it is not a trendy diet like keto or paleo. It's a diet that just works and has been proven to increase longevity. And it is not that glamorous. It's everything that we know to be a healthy diet. It's a ton of fruits, vegetables, seeds, nuts, whole grains, healthy fats, and lean meats. And for me, I do all of that besides the lean meats because I am vegetarian, but I make sure that I have enough protein. And it's balancing these macros and getting from non-processed sources that is really the emphasis here. So you won't hear crazy things with keto or paleo about people dropping pounds, and usually those pounds that are lost are water weight anyway, because when you decrease your carb intake, it's called a carbohydrate because they bind water. So you're only losing water weight there. The Mediterranean diet is really what is needed for long-term healthy lifestyle. So I was really happy that that was what I was recommended. So then I ended up trusting her supplement recommendations a little bit more than I otherwise would. But I still do all of my homework. So I looked up all of the supplements that she did recommend and found not just blog posts about these supplements, but I found the original research articles and meta-analyses about these supplements to make sure that I knew what I was getting and that they were efficacious, because these supplements are extremely expensive. So I ended up only buying some ginger supplements because I don't use ginger too often when I'm seasoning my food. So I got ginger tea and then I got ginger capsules, and I won't use those both in the same day, but I'll kind of spread those out. I did find evidence that ginger was helpful for the follicular phase, so I chose to get those supplements. I am also looking for Vitex supplements. This is also known as Chastaberry, and I found really good evidence that this increases the length of the luteal phase, because I think maybe part of my problem is having a really short luteal phase. So I will be getting those supplements. I couldn't find it at my CVS or Walgreens, so I'm going to try some of the health food stores in my area instead. And CoQ10 was also recommended to me, but the supplements that I was finding were extremely expensive, like $50 for a 30-day supply, and also had a gelatin in all of the capsules. So I put a hold on that, but I'm also not sure about it because CoQ10, I could only find that there was benefits in perimenopausal women and women that were older with decreased ovarian reserves trying to get pregnant. And so I don't really fall into that age group. So I don't think that I need it, but I know CoQ10 doesn't have any negative side effects. My husband takes CoQ10 in his vitamins every day. So I didn't see a reason not to take them either. So I am debating off of whether to get that. If I can find one cheaper, I could probably decide to go with it. But then Black Cohosh was also recommended to me, but I couldn't really find too much in the literature about this besides when it is taken in conjunction with Clomid, with clomiphene citrate, when trying to induce ovulation. So when and if my midwife decides to start me on that medication, then I will absolutely take that alongside of it. But I didn't really see an indication for taking that just regularly. And then the last one was alfalfa, which I couldn't find anything at all indicating a reason to take that for fertility. And in fact, all of what I was finding was reasons not to take it during pregnancy. Because of it being a raw sprout, it has the capability of harnessing listeria, which is an illness that you can get of the GI system that can lead to meningitis in the newborn. So I'm probably not going to get that one, but I was really glad for my midwife to suggest these supplements as I started to do some research and decide what is good for me, because I am really willing to try different supplements even if it's not standard of care or if doctors are using it every day on their patients, because I think a lot of the healthcare industry wants to profit off of prescription medications, so doctors aren't incentivized into looking at over-the-counter treatments that might be good for their patients because it's not their job to prescribe it. They just have to tell their patient, go to the store and buy it yourself. So they have no way to profit off of it. And if we don't know everything about the supplement, doctors can be hesitant at recommending it because supplements won't have side effects on the bottles and potential adverse effects, and they haven't been FDA approved. So there's just a lot that goes into that, but I think it was good that my midwife at least said, like, these are the ones that you should look into. I think that's really helpful. And then just for her to tell me that I don't really have any contraindications or reasons why I shouldn't go on these supplements that she knows of, but to take it at my own risk. Because I definitely think that a lot of supplements have a lot of value. I also think that supplement companies are also trying to make a profit off of you as well. So you have to be careful about both ways, that you should be pretty open to supplements, but you have to be wary as well. Maybe a supplement's not doing anything. Very few supplements are actually harmful, but a lot of them are probably useless or close to useless. And there's probably, in reality, a lot of medications that are better for you. But I think as far as optimizing health, supplements can be miracle workers, really. And that's to say, I'm someone who takes turmeric regularly. I cook with it for its medical benefits, and also cinnamon as well, and garlic. A lot of those have, I am convinced from the literature that these are very helpful, but I am very hesitant to add to my list different things that can help as well. But that is just to say that at this point in my journey, it's kind of a waiting game. I'm just waiting for my period to come so that we can do additional testing. Also, the reason why I haven't had my period yet is not because I'm already pregnant, because I also had a beta HCG test done and it was very low, so that means not pregnant. So if I took a pregnancy test, it would be negative. So that's not the reason why I'm not having my period. So maybe it's the pill, maybe it's something underlining, I don't know. I might have my husband get his sperm checked too. Who knows? I just want to cover all my bases and know that if there's a problem, I want to know what it is and I want to know how to fix it, and I want to work towards that goal. It's just hard to be patient. I don't want to feel like I'm in a rush for having a baby, because I'm going to have a kid for 18 years and a lifetime with them. So it's just hard, but I want it to fit in my schedule, but then I feel guilty for saying that. But it's just to say that there's better times than others, and I'm going to do whatever timing a child comes is going to be the timing that it is. But if I can, if it is in any of my power to optimize it, then I'm going to do that too. So it's just a struggle, but I haven't really talked to anyone besides my husband, my midwife, about any of this. So I'm just recording this in reflecting to myself, but I think part of me would be more open to talking about it with my friends and families when I finally know that I'm pregnant and I'm far enough along that there's a very low chance of any complications. So past the first trimester, but otherwise I'm keeping this to myself because it is my journey and I don't need to share it with anyone, but I eventually definitely do. But I think as far as this part of my journey, it is a little embarrassing to have problems, you know, because women are supposed to have babies. That is what our genetics are. And as someone who is very health conscious and does all the right things, or at least tries to do all the right things, and wants to work on educating people, educating patients, then I should at least get this right so I can help other people get it right. But it doesn't always work out that way. But it's still something that I don't really want other people to struggle with me either. Like, as I'm going through it, I want to come out the other side after a struggle triumphant and then share it, but I don't know if that's the best thing either. So I think all of that is valuable, whether I succeed or not. It's valuable, but I'm hoping that I do eventually succeed, and I would want a happy ending to this story, but not all of life is happy endings either. So, but I am surely hoping and praying for a happy ending.
View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to Firstline's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to Firstline on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.